All right, buckle up, everyone, because today we're diving headfirst into the world of airborne operations.
Yeah, should be fun.
We've got our hands on some really fascinating stuff. Training manuals, regulations.
Oh, and even a few insider handouts.
This deep dive is all about the practical side of things.
Boots on the ground.
Well, more like boots in the air, right? We're talking equipment, procedures.
The absolute essentials for a safe jump.
Exactly. And trust me, you'd be surprised at what we found.
Like, did you know there are specific weight limits for equipment?
Yeah. I mean, I knew it was important, but I had no idea it was down to the ounce.
It can make or break a mission.
And even something as simple as tape. Turns out, it plays a crucial role.
It all comes down to safety and precision.
Speaking of precision, the Jumpmaster team, these manuals practically treat them like the conductors of an orchestra.
It's a good analogy.
Making sure everything's in sync, every instrument playing its part perfectly.
And the manuals, especially SLJMC-002 Duties and Responsibilities of the JM Team, they make it clear the Jumpmaster's job...
It doesn't just start at the airfield.
Nope, their responsibility kicks in the moment they get that mission notification.
Wow, so they're thinking about every detail right from the get-go.
Absolutely.
It's a huge responsibility, though. I mean, coordinating a group of people... jumping out of a perfectly good airplane.
No room for error.
Exactly. And that's why the Jumpmaster team, it's structured so carefully, right?
Like a well-oiled machine.
Everyone has specific roles, qualifications.
Even currency requirements. Kind of like a pilot needing to log a certain number of flight hours.
Right. Makes sense.
So according to SLJMC-002, we've got the airborne commander, oversees the entire operation.
Big picture guy.
Then there's the primary jump master.
The one actually running the jump.
Exactly. The assistant jump master provides support. And then, of course, the safety.
Keeping everyone safe, I'd imagine.
That's the idea.
So the safety focuses on making sure everything is done by the book.
Precisely. And here's an interesting tidbit. A senior or master rated jump master, they can actually maintain their currency just by performing those safety duties on certain aircraft.
Oh, really? Like which ones?
High-performance, fixed-wing aircraft.
So it's like how doctors and lawyers have to stay up to date, you know, keep learning.
Continuous education.
It shows how seriously they take safety and expertise in airborne operations.
Absolutely. And that focus on preparation, it's evident in every step leading up to the jump.
You mean even before they get near the aircraft?
Years before.
Like what?
Well, first you've got the operations brief, sometimes called a MAKO brief.
Okay, got it.
And then there's the mandatory sustained airborne training.
SAT, right.
You got it. Conducted within 24 hours of takeoff.
Now, from what I saw in that SLJMC-019 sustained airborne training handout, SAT, it's not just sitting through a PowerPoint.
Oh, no, no, no.
This is intense pre-jump training.
Practicing those parachute landing falls.
Ouch.
And even mock door rehearsals.
Wow, so they really put them through their paces.
It's all about turning those procedures into second nature.
Muscle memory.
Exactly. Building confidence. That's crucial when you're dealing with the stress of a real jump.
Makes sense.
Imagine standing at the open door of an aircraft, hundreds of feet in the air.
You don't want to be fumbling with your equipment or second-guessing yourself.
Not at all.
And speaking of equipment, I gotta say, I was blown away by how detailed these sources are about the gear jumpers use.
Especially when it comes to containers and weight limits.
Yeah, I mean, it's like... every ounce matters.
You can't just toss things in a bag and hope for the best.
It's all carefully calculated.
SLJMC-003 Individual Equipment Containers. That's your go-to for this. It covers everything.
From helmets to weapons cases.
Even those little suspension pads in the helmet.
It's amazing how much thought goes into every little detail.
And those weight limits, they're absolutely critical.
Like exceeding them could affect how the equipment deploys.
Put the jumper at risk.
Exactly. So packing for an airborne operation, it's definitely not like packing for a weekend getaway.
More like a carefully choreographed ballet of weight distribution and equipment placement.
Every item has its designated spot. And the weight, it's meticulously calculated to ensure everything functions as
it
should.
It's all about safety and mission effectiveness.
Now, all that gear and those highly trained jumpers.
They need some serious aircraft to get them in the air.
And let me tell you, the sources did not disappoint in that department.
We're talking fixed wing giants like the C-130 and the C-17.
Those are impressive.
The versatile rotary wing UH-60 Blackhawk and CH-47 Chinook.
And even the smaller KSA-212.
It's an airborne arsenal.
Seriously, the SLJMC-010 Army and non-standard aircraft source, it breaks down each aircraft's capability.
The specific procedures for each one?
It's incredible how much variety there is.
For example, on a UH-60, they even have to take down things like antenna wires.
Wait, really? Antenna wires?
Yep, to prevent them from snagging on the static lines during the jump.
Wow, that's a level of detail I never would have considered.
It just goes to show how important it is to think about every possible variable in airborne operations.
Even the smallest oversight could have major consequences.
And that's where the safety's role becomes absolutely crucial.
So they're not just checking equipment?
No, they're constantly monitoring for potential hazards.
What kind of hazards?
Well, for one, they manage the static lines during the exit.
Okay, that makes sense.
And they even handle those jump refusals.
Jump refusals. Wait, so someone's literally standing at the open door of an airplane.
About to jump.
And they refuse. What happens then?
The SLJMC-012A, Duties and Responsibilities of the Safety, it lays out a clear procedure.
Okay.
They assess the situation, communicate with the jumper.
Make sure they're okay.
And if necessary, prevent them from exiting the aircraft.
Wow, that must be so intense for everyone involved.
There's a specific command, too. It's a do not touch your equipment.
Why is that?
To make sure the jumper doesn't accidentally interfere with the static line or any other jumpers.
I see. It's like a safety protocol.
Exactly. Got to prevent any accidents.
It's a stark reminder that even with all the training and preparation, things can still go wrong.
It's the nature of the beast.
Absolutely. And that's why having those well-defined processes
and a skilled safety on board,
that's so crucial,
keeps the operation running smoothly, even under pressure.
Okay. I'm also curious about some other potential dangers mentioned in the sources.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Like toad jumpers.
Oh, yeah.
And red light procedures.
Those sound like straight out of a movie scenarios.
They do, but they're real risks, right?
They are. And jump masters and safety personnel, they're trained to handle them.
So explain a toad jumper to me.
It's pretty much what it sounds like. The jumper gets snagged on the aircraft during the exit.
Oh, no.
And they're dragged along.
That's terrifying.
The safety has to make split-second decisions.
To either help retrieve the jumper.
Or, in extreme cases, cut the static line.
Wow, that's heavy stuff.
It is.
And what about a red light procedure?
That's when something happens, like an obstacle on the drop zone, a sudden weather change.
Makes it unsafe to jump.
Exactly. The red light goes on inside the aircraft, and everyone, even if they're already in the door, they have to abort the jump.
Whoa, that must take incredible discipline.
Trust in the jump master's judgment.
It's like slamming on the brakes the last second before a collision.
It really underscores how dynamic and unpredictable airborne operations can be.
But even with all these potential dangers, the sources also talk about the incredible precision involved in getting those jumpers to their target.
We're talking pinpoint accuracy.
Right. And we can't forget about the drop zone itself.
It's not just jumping out of a plane. It's about landing in the right place at the right time.
And that brings us to those fascinating acronyms. I was really trying to wrap my head around them. CR, GMRS, VRRS.
They sound like something out of a spy thriller.
They do.
But they're all about precision and safety.
Okay, so break them down for me.
CRRP, that stands for Computed Air Release Point. GMRS is Ground Marked Release System.
Okay.
And VRS is Verbally Initiated Release System.
Each system is used in different situations, right?
To ensure the parachutes drop accurately and safely.
Especially when you consider things like wind, aircraft speed, altitude.
It gets complicated.
Well, the SLJMC-009 CRP Airborne Operations, SLJMC-024 GMRS Airborne Operations, and the SLJMC-025 VRS Airborne Operations, they actually lay out the formulas they use to calculate these release points.
It's like a mix of physics, meteorology,
and a whole lot of math.
Definitely.
And the jump master has to do all these calculations quickly and accurately, often under pressure.
Talk about pressure.
It's like they're air traffic controllers for the drop zone.
Guiding those jumpers to a safe landing.
Wow, I'm really starting to see how all these pieces fit together.
It's an intricate system.
The planning, the training, the equipment, the safety protocols.
It's all connected.
It's a truly impressive operation.
It is.
And to think, we've only just scratched the surface.
We've got so much more to unpack.
Okay, I'm ready for part two. What else do these sources reveal about the world of airborne operations?
Let's dive in. Okay, so let's shift gears a bit and talk about that moment of truth, you know, exiting the aircraft.
The actual jump.
Yeah, this is where all that planning, all that training, it all comes together.
It's showtime.
Exactly. And the SLJMC-007 Sustained Airborne Training, that document really goes into detail.
About the X-ing procedures.
Yeah, right down to how the jumpers hold their static lines. It's incredible.
So much emphasis on precision, uniformity.
It has to be perfect. Remember those mock door rehearsals we talked about?
Yeah, the ones during SAT.
They're not just for show. They're designed to drill those procedures into muscle memory.
So when those jumpers are in the air, under pressure, they execute flawlessly.
Instinct takes over.
And the jump commands themselves. They're almost poetic in a way, you know?
How so?
Well, the way they're laid out in the source, step by step, that simplicity, that urgency.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Get ready, check static lines, check equipment, and then...
The big one.
Go. I mean, talk about an adrenaline rush.
It's a carefully choreographed sequence designed to ensure everyone exits safely in the right order.
I can only imagine what it's like to hear those commands.
The wind whipping past.
The ground hundreds of feet below.
It's a rush, for sure.
But the sources also make it clear that, well, things don't always go according to plan.
Right, there can be malfunctions.
Exactly. So what happens then?
That's where the training really kicks in. Jumpers, they're equipped to handle a variety of malfunctions.
They are.
Absolutely. The SLJMC Zero Sempene Sustained Airborne Training Source, it goes into detail about identifying different types of malfunctions.
Like what kinds of malfunctions?
Could be anything. Partial malfunctions, total malfunctions, different procedures for each.
Wow. And then they have to execute the appropriate emergency procedures.
Exactly. Think fast, adapt, overcome.
So they're not just hoping for the best. They're trained to be problem solvers.
Even in a life or death situation.
That's incredible, because it takes a certain kind of person to be an airborne jumper.
It does. They're highly skilled professionals, not thrill seekers.
That's a good distinction. They're not just adrenaline junkies. They're trained for this.
Rigorous training.
All right, so let's say everything goes smoothly during the exit.
Main parachute opens.
Jumpers floating towards the earth.
What happens next?
Well, how do they control their descent? How do they steer towards the drop zone?
That's where the different canopies come in.
Oh, right. We talked about those earlier.
The MC-6 main canopy, for example.
That's the one designed for maneuverability.
Exactly. It has these extended gores. They act like wings.
Okay. So the jumper can steer by pulling on the control lines.
Yep. They can maneuver to avoid obstacles, adjust for wind drift.
It's not just drifting aimlessly.
Nope. They have a degree of control over their direction and landing point.
That's amazing. And then, of course, there's the landing.
The moment of truth.
We talked about those parachute landing falls, PLFs.
Right, but it's not just about rolling when you hit the ground.
There's a technique to it.
Absolutely. The SLJMC Zero Rescend Sustained Airborne Training emphasizes the importance of distributing the force of impact correctly.
To avoid injury.
Exactly. They even break down the specific body positioning for different landing scenarios.
Keep different scenarios.
Front right, front left, rear right, rear left. You got to be prepared for anything.
So it's a combination of, like, athleticism and physics.
Knowing how to use your body to minimize impact.
That's fascinating. It's a skill that takes practice.
Dedication, for sure, but it's essential for anyone involved in airborne operations.
A safe landing is just as important as a safe exit.
Absolutely. Can't forget about that.
So we've covered exiting the aircraft, navigating the descent, landing safely.
What about the drop zone itself?
Right. How do they ensure those jumpers land in the right place?
Well, the sources provide some really interesting details about different types of drop zones.
Other selected, Mark.
We talked about CRP and GMRS.
Right. But there's also VIRS, the Verbally Initiated Release System.
You got it.
According to SLJMC 025 VRS Airborne Operations, it's often used with rotary wing aircraft.
Smaller fixed wing aircraft.
Operating in more challenging terrain.
Exactly. With VRS, there's direct communication between the jump master on the aircraft and the drop zone safety officer, the DZSO, on the ground.
So the DZSO, they're the ones guiding the aircraft to the drop zone.
Using verbal cues, and then they give the command to initiate the jump.
When the aircraft's in the ideal position.
It's a much more dynamic and responsive system.
Especially when a predetermined drop point might not be feasible.
Due to terrain, other factors, you gotta be flexible.
It shows how adaptable airborne operations can be, always adjusting to the situation.
Real-time decision-making, that's key.
The sources really emphasize that every mission is unique.
Requires a combination of planning and on-the-fly adjustments.
To ensure success.
Speaking of unique missions, I think it's worth highlighting the diversity of aircraft used in airborne operations.
Yeah, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Not at all. The SLJMC 010 Army and Non-Standard Aircraft document, it really showcases the versatility of the airborne fleet.
Like the C-130. That's the workhorse for larger scale operations, right?
Capable of carrying a significant payload, long distances.
And then you have something like the UH-60, more agile.
better suited for smaller teams, insertions into tighter areas.
So many factors to consider when choosing the right aircraft.
Payload capacity, range, terrain, weather conditions, and of course, the mission objectives.
It's like a giant puzzle.
Finding the right piece for the job.
And once that aircraft is in the air, loaded with jumpers and equipment.
We come back to those critical calculations for the release point.
CRP, GMRS, VRS.
The precision involved is just mind-boggling.
The formulas in the SLJMC-009 airborne operations and the SLJMC-024 GMRS airborne operations, I mean, they're pretty intimidating.
A lot of math.
They have to account for wind speed and direction, aircraft speed, altitude, the weight and drag of the parachutes.
Every little detail matters.
A miscalculation could mean missing the drop zone entirely.
Or worse.
It's a delicate balancing act. Very little room for error.
The Jumpmaster team, they have a huge responsibility.
They're not just jumping out of planes. They're air traffic controllers, mathematicians, leaders, all rolled into one.
The brains of the operation.
Making sure everything runs smoothly.
Every jumper gets to their destination safely.
So we've covered a lot of ground in this part, from exiting the aircraft to the intricacies of landing on the drop zone.
Airborne operations, it's a carefully orchestrated ballet.
Specialized equipment.
Highly trained individuals.
Working together to achieve a common goal.
And we're about to uncover even more fascinating insights in the final part of our deep dive.
Okay, I'm ready to wrap things up. What other surprises do these sources have in store for us? Let's move on to part three. All right, so we've covered the jumpers, the parachutes, the aircraft, the drop zones, but what about all the other equipment? You know, the stuff that needs to be transported, dropped, used on the ground.
That's a whole other world. And these sources, they get into some fascinating details.
Like what kind of details?
Well, the variety of containers and equipment involved is just incredible.
We're not just talking about backpacks and rifles here.
No, we're talking specialized containers for everything.
Ammunition, medical supplies.
Heavy weapons, even vehicles.
Seriously. They can drop vehicles from the air.
Oh, yeah. They have specialized platforms and parachutes designed for that kind of heavy lifting.
That's incredible. And the SLJMC-007A series containers document, it really gets into the specifics of these containers, the A series containers.
They're designed to handle a wide range of payloads, different sizes, shapes, weights.
And it even mentions something called a low-cost, low-altitude airdrop. LCLA.
LCLA, yeah, that's a really interesting concept. It's all about speed and efficiency.
So how does it work?
It uses expendable parachutes designed for drops from lower altitudes.
So not those big billowing parachutes we usually see.
Right, these are smaller, more streamlined.
And because they're dropped from lower altitudes?
It's faster, and it can be used in situations where a traditional airdrop might not be possible.
Like if the aircraft can't fly high enough.
Exactly. Or if there's a need for a more precise drop closer to the ground troops.
So it's like a rapid response delivery system for the battlefield.
You got it. Getting those crucial supplies where they're needed, when they're needed.
It's amazing how they've adapted these techniques to meet the demands of modern warfare.
Airborne operations are constantly evolving.
And speaking of adaptation, we've talked about the different aircraft used in these operations.
The C-130s, the UH-60s, each aircraft has its own strengths and weaknesses.
Right, and choosing the right aircraft for the mission, it's a critical decision.
Absolutely. The SLJMC-010 Army and non-standard aircraft source, it lays out the factors that go into that decision.
Payload capacity, range, terrain, weather. It's a lot to consider.
And then, of course, the specific objectives of the mission that always drives the decision-making process.
So many moving parts, so many factors to weigh.
It's a complex puzzle.
But once that aircraft is in the air, loaded up, and ready to go,
we come back to those critical calculations for the release point.
CARP, GMRS, VRS.
It all comes down to precision.
And those formulas in the SLJMC-009 airborne operations and the SLJMC-024 GMRS airborne operations, I mean, they're not for the faint of heart.
A lot of variables to consider.
Wind speed and direction, aircraft speed, altitude, the weight and drag of everything wing drop.
The jump masters, they have to be on top of their game.
A slight miscalculation could have serious consequences.
Missing the drop zone, putting people at risk.
It's a huge responsibility.
They're not just jumping out of planes, they're making life or death calculations.
They're the brains behind the operation, making sure everything comes together seamlessly.
It's a team effort, everyone plays a crucial role.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of airborne operations, What's the one key takeaway you want our listeners to walk away with?
I think the biggest takeaway is the incredible level of precision and planning that goes into every single aspect of these operations.
From the initial planning stages to the final jump, every detail matters.
It's a testament to human ingenuity, our ability to overcome challenges, and the dedication of the individuals involved.
You've definitely given me a newfound respect for everyone involved in airborne operations. It's a truly fascinating world.
A world of precision, skill, and courage.
And sometimes the most incredible stories are hidden in the details.
That's what makes these deep dives so rewarding.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us on this journey. And until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and as always, stay curious.